meditation. The Upadesha Mudra. Upadesh means instruction and Amrita means nectar. The nectar of one instruction. Which means that all the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, as enunciated by Sri Rupa Swami and the six Goswamis, have been encapsulated in these 11 verses. Upadeshamrita, I told you in the beginning of the course, looks like just a small little book. But it's not a small book like Coming Back or something. This is a very essential book, which is full of all the instructions required for us to advance in Krishna consciousness. Once, if you remember, during the disappearance day of Srila Rupa Goswami, we sang Acharya Thakur, Goya Vaishnava Thakur, and I told you that that song compiled by Bhaktivinoda Thakur is actually made after this Upadeshamrita. So, this prayer, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Vai Vaishnava Thakur, has been fashioned after this Upadeshamrita, which is giving us an overview of everything about bhakti and Krishna consciousness, what we would call in English from A to Z. The very beginning stage, which is in verse 1, and the end stage, which is in verse 11. I'm talking of the ultimate achievement of entering the spiritual world in a spiritual body. So it's a very important book for us. It is said that seeds for these compilation of Upadeshamrita was gotten by Rupa Goswami in Jagannath Puri when he was spending time with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu there, and sometimes meeting him, observing him. Lord Chaitanya would go in great stages of ecstasy, especially in his room at the Gambira, and also when he would go to the ocean, which he would take for the Yamuna. And then he would remember Vrindavan, and he would enter very high stages of transcendental consciousness and ecstasy. And he would utter different words and glorify the spiritual world and remember the inhabitants of the spiritual world and express the truth of Krishna consciousness. So Rupa Goswami, who was very observing, he always took the opportunity of noting down something. And from the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, he compiled this Upadeshamrita. The Upadeshamrita was written before the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, so we studied before. And it will be helpful for you when you study the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, you will already have a background, because actually the same thing is presented in the two books. But the Upadeshamrita is very concise, and the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is an extended presentation of the realm of bhakti. So, when we talk of this Upadeshamrita, Srila Prabhupada says that it's a very essential compilation of Rupa Goswami. Just as we have the Shikshastaka from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which expresses in 8 verses all the teachings of Mahaprabhu, whatever he wanted to say. He has put it in the Shikshastaka. So similarly, Srila Rupa Goswami, whatever he wanted to explain, he has put in this Upadeshamrita. So therefore, it is very important for us to study this book, especially knowing that Srila Rupa Goswami is Sri Chaitanya Manohushta, the one who knows the heart of Lord Chaitanya, and he could convey the message of Lord Chaitanya like no other. All the six Goswamis were conveying that message. However, amongst all the six Goswamis, Srila Prabhupada explains in his preface, Srila Rupa Goswami was considered the leader. the other Goswamis regarded him as their leader, although Rupa Goswami, in great humility, always respected his elder brother Sanatan. So it is an important part of our study of the Bhakti Shastri. A little history of this Upadeshamrita in terms of its publishing in ISKCON. It is recorded by Hari Shauri Prabhu in his Transcendental Diary, Volume 1. He remembers it was in January 1st, 1976, in ISKCON Juhu, in Bombay. Srila Prabhupada received the first copies of a pocket book, he says, a pocket size book, and that he had translated and that had been published. At that time, everything was getting published in Los Angeles. So he had received this Sri Upadeshamrita, the Nectar of Instruction. And Prabhupada, he says, appeared very satisfied with it. And immediately he asked how many copies have been printed. And he was told that they had only printed 10,000 copies. So Srila Prabhupada asked, why only 10,000 copies? Why 10,000? 10,000, it's not that many, because devotees were distributing books by the thousands. Book distribution was very high. So this was in 76, so it means ISKCON was already all over the world and book distribution was going very strong. So he wanted to know why. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj explained that the BBT staff, the directors of the BBT, they thought that the book is meant primarily for devotees. When you read it, it looks like it's really something. It's for devotees. It's all about bhakti and how to progress in bhakti, and it's instructions which are meant for those who practice. It doesn't look like a book that you just give to somebody on the street. So the BBT staff, they thought like this, and so they only printed 10,000, thinking we have about 10,000 devotees in ISKCON, so we printed for them. But Srila Prabhupada told Tamal Krishna Maharaj to inform Rameshwar to print at least 100,000 immediately. And so why he was saying that? Why Prabhupada had a different vision from them? Even if we read that book, we may think this is really for ISKCON devotees. So we can understand Srila Prabhupada's vision in a letter that he wrote just a few days after that, on the 5th of January. He wrote a letter to Radha Vallabh Prabhu. And he says, the Nectar instruction has come out very nice. It is very important and must be immediately read by all the devotees. In the near future, we shall introduce the Bhakti Shastri examination for second initiation, and this shall be one of the required books of study. Anyone who reads it will immediately understand what Krishna consciousness is. So what is the book about?
Krishna consciousness
and what it is, if we haven't understood yet. So what is Krishna consciousness? We will actually get quite a clear glimpse by studying that book. Some minister in Bombay recently asked me, Prabhupada says, how to create... So now this is one thing. Prabhupada said all the devotees should read it and they will understand what Krishna consciousness is. But then he says, some minister in Bombay recently asked me how to create morality amongst the students, because the students are all vagabonds these days. In this book, if this book is introduced for study in the schools and colleges, it will give a clear idea of what morality actually is. It is a most important book. So what is the second thing that we are learning from this book?
Morality.
What is morality? how a human being should behave. That is described in this book as well, because a Vaishnava, a Krishna conscious person, naturally imbibes morality, is imbued with morality. So therefore Prabhupada saw that this book can be distributed to the public as well, and they will be benefited. So we shall be studying this book. I had a little comment from one of our ISKCON leaders who said that because the meaning of the book is nectar, nectar instruction, he says the nectar is a tonic that stimulates, energizes and extends one's life. This book, Upadeshamrita, is a nectar tonic that stimulates prema to flow within the heart. So it's a spiritual tonic. By reading this book, our bhakti gets, you know, energized. It, not only this, it's a tonic, but he said in the tonic it stimulates, energizes and extends one's life. So what will Upadeshamrita do? He will stimulate the prema, this love for Krishna which is hidden, covered within our heart. And the Upadeshamrita, not simply by hearing it, but by applying it in our lives, by following its instruction, so carefully packaged by Srila Rupa Goswami, it will actually awaken that prema within our heart. And he says it will lead us out of the body. Nectar usually gives long life, so Upadeshamrita will give more than long life, eternal life. It will lead us, and you will see that as we progress through the book and we reach the end of the book, that this book will actually lead us out of the material body in the higher stages of Krishna consciousness. And it will lead us into the nectar of bathing in Srimati Radhika's eternal service in a divine body surcharged with spiritual ecstasy. So this is where the book ends. Srila Prabhupada, however, so this looks like, wow, it's such a, you know, it's instructions, including instructions for very advanced devotees to advance to the top of Krishna consciousness. However, Srila Prabhupada, he calls Upadeshamrita in the preface, first instructions for neophytes. And the fact is that this Upadeshamrita, it starts from ABC. So it's the first instructions. How to begin the cultivation of Krishna consciousness. How to practice from the very, very beginning. But it also explains for a neophyte, the initial verses and descriptions are very, very, very useful. And then after some time you will see, you start kind of finding it difficult to understand. Because it starts describing higher stages of Krishna consciousness which we are not able to grasp. But as one practices the first verses, ultimately one will come to the various other stages. And what is very good with Upadeshamrita is that even if we don't understand the last verses, it gives us a glimpse of the goal, where to go. Otherwise, as you know very well, we become devotees by reading some book or meeting some devotee, taking some prasada. And then we are instructed to chant. And usually after some time, for many, many devotees, the goal becomes, what the goal becomes for a new devotee?
Initiation.
Initiation, yes. The goal of a devotee initially is to take initiation. And very unfortunately, there are some devotees who, having taken initiation, think that the goal has been achieved. Whereas Srila Prabhupada pointed out that initiation in English, it's a very good word for diksha, initiation means beginning. It is the beginning. So we come to know this when we read Upadeshamrita, because Upadeshamrita is going to point to a goal so much further away. And if we have that goal from the very beginning, that we start practicing Krishna consciousness, then we won't stop on the way and we will know that we haven't achieved the goal. And we will keep going. So it is important to actually keep us going. So it is, we could say it's a guide. It's an instructing guide, a manual for sadhakas. It gives a basic idea of how to practice Krishna consciousness from the beginner stage, which is the practice of sadhana, and especially Vedi sadhana bhakti, with the mind and senses. And then it takes us to the level of raganuga sadhana, which sometimes in our society, due to various reasons, almost became a bad word. Anyone who says raganuga says, oh, where have you been? You've been hanging around somewhere else? No, raganuga is very much a part of what we have received at the time of initiation. So the Upadeshamrita will explain this, the beginning stages, then coming to raganuga sadhana, and then it will take us up to the topmost level of realization, which is service into a perfected siddha deha, a perfected spiritual body. So this is the Upadeshamrita. We are going to study this Upadeshamrita with reference, with bringing in a few references, notably, of course, our first reference is Srila Prabhupada's purpose. We are studying Srila Prabhupada's purpose. And you will notice sometimes, or sometimes you won't, but in Srila Prabhupada's purpose, there is a part always which is compiled by him, and there is a part which is a quotation. Srila Prabhupada is quoting who? Upa Goswami is the verses. The verses are from the Upa Goswami. I'm talking of the purpose. Who is he quoting in the purpose? Various shastra, nana, shastra, vichara, naikanifuno, and what else? Who? His guru, yes, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur himself wrote a commentary on Upadeshamrita, which he called Anuvritti, which means following. Anuvritti. He wrote it on the order of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He wrote the Anuvritti, a commentary, following in the footsteps of Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself, who also wrote a commentary of the Upadeshamrita. The Upadeshamrita commentary by Bhaktivinoda Thakur is called the no, that's another one. Piyush Varshani Vritti. Varshani means rain of nectar. So when we study, we will refer to Bhaktisiddhanta's Anuvritti, which has been quoted a lot in the purports. We will refer to Prabhupada's purports. We will refer to the Piyusha Varshini Vritti of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and we will also refer to this book that you have mentioned called Bhaktya Loka, which you can purchase in the ISKCON bookstore. Bhaktya Loka is a compilation of 6 essays which were written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And these essays, 6 of them, they are commentaries, expansion, expanding on the instructions which are given, especially in verses 2 and 3. Utsahani Sayadharya, like that. So, these verses have been expanded by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in essays, and later on all these essays have been put together and published as Bhaktyaloka. In Bhaktyaloka you will also find a lot of explanations about verse 1. So verse 1, verse 2, verse 3, we are going to refer to Bhaktyaloka. Let us have a little overview of our Upadeshamrita. How many verses we said? 11 verses. And they are structured very, very
systematic.
Yes. Maybe we could sing them. That would be a good step to enter into the nectar of this little book. So let us see. Verse 1, very famous verse. Verse 1, 2, 3 are memory verses for you to know by heart. Okay? So let us try to read this. Vacho vedam manasa prodha vedam jiva vedam hasta vedam evam evam yogishahe vedam sarva imam prithivim sasishya. Then we have text 2. Atyahara prayasascha chatalpo niyamakrama jana sankascha bhavyascha shatir bhaktir vinashyati. What is the important word here? Vinashyati. That is the key word. Vinashyati means?
Destroys.
It is a yeast that destroys. Destroys what?
Bhakti.
Then verse 3. Utsaha nishaya naira tattatkaram pravartanat sankhanat manachagatsa yomite shadhir kamadir vasisyati. So these are another the list which are favorable to bhakti. Verse 4. Dadati pratidhanati guinamakhyati prishati bhumte bhojayate seva sasvidam prishlakshanam. The signs of love between the devotees. Okay. And then we go to verse 5. Krishne viyasya viditam manasa vijeta viksha siche prati vischa matanta nisham shushushaya matana vijyama nanya nanya ninda nishunya vidami sita samta labhya. Okay, it's about the devotees. Text 6. Dishte swabhava janita vakusas chadoshen na prakritatta vinabhakta chatasya pashye gangam prasanga khalu budbuda pena panke brahma dravatma pagatya sihira dharmaihi. Okay, so this is an analogy. We go to text 7. Sya Krishna nama charita visita pavidya pitto patapta rasana syana rochikano kinka darana nudinam karusena jushta sadrika madhavati shakya dapura hantri. This was 7. Tannama rupa charitadi sukirtanano smrityo gradena sanamana siniyoja tishtam prajeta dharpuragita nanugrami kalamayena kila mitri upadesha saram. The upadesha saram, this verse 8, it marks a change in the Upadeshamrita. We will talk about it when we finish the reading. This is the essence of all instructions. Then, Vaikuntha Nityokaranga Dukurita Tavira Sotsavad Vrindaranya Mudara Parira Karmibhya parito hare priyataya nyakti nyayurjyanina te pravjyana vimukta bhakti paramatmene kanishta sata te kyasa pasupalakam kajadisha sabhyo pisaradika veshta tatvaniyam tadiya sarasitam nasayetka kriti. And finally, verse 11, Krishna Shoche Pranayavasati Preyasi Pyopirada Kurnam Chasyamuni Viravitasadi Eva Dhani Yad Preshterapyanamashuradam Kim Punar Bhakti Bhajam Tad Preyamedam Sakridapisaras Naturadiskaroti. So let us look at this. There are three sections in this Upadeshamrita. I'll take a little overview so that, you know, it is said to us, you should see from the bird view. It's like the Google Maps, you know. You go from the world view and then you go down inside. So we'll take an overview. How many sections?
Three.
Yes, three sections. So the first section, and these sections correspond to the three stages of bhakti. Anyone knows the three stages of bhakti? Different stages? Which is the first stage of bhakti? Sadhana bhakti. Yes. And what is the third type of bhakti? Or second stage? Raganuga bhakti. Yes. There is sadhana bhakti. And then there is raganuga bhakti. And then? Bhava and Prema, which is known as Sadhya. Sadhya means it is bhakti in perfection. Sadhya bhakti. Actually, the first we call sadhana, and raganuga is also sadhana. So within sadhana bhakti, there are two types. What are the two types within sadhana bhakti? Vaidhi and raganuga. Yes. So actually we see bhakti as two different types. It is sadhana bhakti, which means practice. The attraction for Krishna is not really there. We are trying our best. We are practicing. And the impetus can be various. But the best is, first of all, there is the Guru told us to do. The Shastra tells us to do. And to some extent we have understood. So we have some self-motivation also, that we want to please Krishna. That is sadhana bhakti, pure. Of course there can be other motivations. We will explore that a little bit. But sadhana bhakti in pure devotion means you want to follow the spiritual master, the Shastra, and you want to please Krishna. But the love for Krishna, the realization of Krishna, the specific flavor of our relationship with Krishna, that is absent. So it is called practice. It's like Prabhupada said, the child who learns how to walk is learning how to walk. Actually, the power to walk is in the human child. It is not there in the chimpanzee. It is not there. The scientists, they have tried, you know that? They make all kinds of studies. So there was a couple, husband and wife, scientists. they actually adopted a baby chimpanzee. Nice, small one. So they calculated everything so that the lady scientist would deliver her baby at the same time as the chimpanzee mother would deliver her baby. So they had like twins. One human baby and one chimpanzee baby. Because they wanted to check. What did they want to check? Some people say that humans, you know, they do so many things because they are trained from birth by humans. So that's how they develop all these human abilities. But the chimpanzee is trained by some chimpanzee, so he becomes a chimpanzee. So, but if he's trained by a human, maybe he can also. So they tried like this, and in the very beginning, they looked the same. They were just both lying on the back. They couldn't turn around. And the little baby was crying. Both of them, they were crying. And both of them were doing the same thing. They were showing the same affection for the mother, who was a human. So they were doing all this. But at some point, what to do? The small baby human, he stood on 2 feet. And the chimpanzee, he stayed on his 4 feet. And he could never walk really, properly. And the human being, he started talking. And the chimpanzee girl, he could not speak. So this means that within the soul, there is, just as in a human baby body, the features are not manifested yet, but the propensity is there. So you just get the baby to practice. You practice walking, you practice talking, you practice all this, and after some time, he talks. It is not that it came from outside, it was inside, the ability was there. And by practice, it became full-fledged manifest. But in the chimpanzee, the ability is not there. So even if you practice, it doesn't come. So Sadhanabhakti is like this, that within the soul, the jiva, there is this eternal ability, inclination, an ability to serve Krishna, to love Krishna, to interact with Him very purely. It is there. And this love for Krishna is manifest in the spiritual world through various kinds of activities. Activities activities in this world are a reflection. So in the spiritual world, the devotees are making garlands for Krishna. They are cooking for Krishna. They are making all kinds of arrangements for Krishna. And these activities are a manifestation of their love. So sadhana bhakti means that you do all these things which are actually a manifestation of eternal love, making a garland for Krishna. We don't just practice putting the flowers. No. To make a garland is a practice in the spiritual world which is a manifestation of love. So, by making the garlands for Krishna day after day after day after day after day as a sadhana, that love is awakened. The relationship with Krishna is remembered and the love is uncovered. Awakened or uncovered. So this is sadhana bhakti. And sadhana bhakti will be described particularly Vedi. What is Vedi? Anyone knows?
Regulated.
According to rules and regulations. So this Vedi sadhana bhakti will be described in Upadeshamrita from verses 1 to 7. Verses 1 to 7. That will be the description of how to follow the rules and regulations of the sadhana in order to somehow awaken our attraction for Krishna. So we have to push ourselves a little bit. And we must say that as we practice, we advance. What are the seven, eight stages of advancement in Krishna consciousness, which Rupa Goswami gives in the Nectar of Devotion? Shraddha. Yes. Sadhu Sangha, Prajana Kriya, Anartha Nivritti, Nishtha, Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava, and Prema. So the Upadeshamrita is also constructed according to these levels of advancement. And this Vedi Sadhana Bhakti takes us all the way to the level of Ruchi. All the way to the level of Ruchi. Ruchi is achieved by Sadhana Bhakti. The taste for chanting the holy name is cultivated by diligently, daily endeavoring to chant Krishna's name attentively and in the right mood. And this will awaken that taste for chanting. So here we see text 1. What is it about text 1? Anybody has read Upadeshamrita?
Mind and
sense control, right? Something like this?
Yeah,
the six urges. So we will go deeper into that verse. But one thing is, where does Krishna consciousness begins or Vedi Bhakti begins? With mind and sense control. In Jnana Marga, what does it mean, mind and sense control in Jnana Marga? Fight with the mind? No. In Jnana Marga, what does it mean? Mind and sense control means? You don't use them. You just don't use, especially the senses. You don't use the senses. Sense object, you don't look. You don't listen. You don't touch. The jnanis, they are renunciates. The extreme renunciates. So, but in the bhakti mark it is different. Mind and sense control means engage in relation to Krishna, in activities which are not material. You engage the mind and senses in spiritual activities. This is the supremacy, the most intelligent part of spirituality, because actually the soul is an active principle. It can never stop activity. We have to understand what is the right activity. And this is what Upadeshamrita is going to teach us. So, sense control. So we are in the realm of Shraddha and Bhajana Kriya. And then verses 2 and 3, they will tell us actually the consequences of controlling the senses and engaging them properly. And the consequences of not engaging the senses properly. We will go up or down. The bhakti will grow or the bhakti will be destroyed. And bhakti means our connection with the Supreme, our connection with the Lord. It will either flourish or it will be destroyed according to how we engage our senses. Then we have three verses, 4, 5 and 6, which are about Sadhu Sangha. So you could say 1, 2, 3 is mostly at the level of Shraddha. It's very preliminary. Very preliminary. That's why Prabhupada said instructions for neophytes. And then 4, 5, 6 is Sadhu Sangha. In 4, you will see the activities of the devotees. How the devotees interact with each other in order to develop love between the devotees and love for Krishna. How they interact. Then in verse 5, you will have the different types of devotees described. How many types of devotees are there? Three. According to their advancement in Krishna consciousness, according which means how they perceive the Lord, how they perceive Him. Some people see Him only in the temple. So, how people perceive, how much knowledge they have, how strong is their conviction, there are different criteria. And six will be another type of sadhu sangha, which is the relationship with guru. Very important. The relationship with the spiritual master. Do's and don'ts. Then number seven. The verse number seven is going to give us the result of proper sadhu sangha, proper bhajana kriya. It will lead us to attentive chanting, and by serving attentively and chanting attentively, one rises to the level of nishtha. Nishtha means steadiness. Because chanting attentively means to steady the mind. This morning we were having japa session. So you can observe during the japa session whether the mind is steady or not. We have to reach that stage where the mind is not spinning anymore. Otherwise the mind is spinning, always spinning. Colors, images, songs, noises, everything. So many things, emotions, it's going round, round, it's like a wheel, it's spinning, 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 spinning. And by chanting the holy name, the spinning starts slowing down, and you hear the holy name and suddenly some thought comes, but then you hear the holy name more, and then after more time, something comes, but again you chant, and if you continue like this, then this spinning slows down, slows down, slows down, and then two things can happen. Either you slow down into tamas and you fall asleep, or you slow down in sattva. And then the gate opens for the chanting in nishtha. And if you chant attentively, awakened in the mode of goodness, then by this constant contact with the holy name, the taste comes. The soul begins to perceive this transcendental atmosphere. And it is so precious. It is so attractive. It is so pleasing that comes that ruchi. And once the ruchi has come, then we want it again and again and again. Just like the materialist, when they taste sense gratification, then next thing is more. So the same thing happens because the soul is satchidananda, searching after ananda. There is spiritual ananda and there is material sukha. So when we taste this spiritual atmosphere, glimpse of that spiritual atmosphere, the taste, then we want more of that. So the determination for sadhana becomes very strong. Then, verse 8 is in a category of its own. This is still sadhana bhakti, but raganuga. Raganuga sadhana bhakti. At the level of asakti. What means asakti? Attraction.
Attachment.
Attachment. Attraction. To what?
Krishna.
To Krishna. And especially, actually, in asakti, the attraction is not yet fully for Krishna as a person, but it is attraction for all these practices, because remember, it is still sadhana. It is the attraction for all these practices that bring us to the transcendental stage. Initially, we are more attracted to playing tennis and football than to chanting Hare Krishna. Right? That is the initial stage. When it is time to play or go to the restaurant, we are ready immediately. And when it is time to chant, read, a little delay. Why? Because the maximum attraction is for other things, material activities. The attraction is more for those things, play piano, do things, you know. The attraction is more for that. But the level of asakti means the attraction is more for the chanting. I don't have time to go to the restaurant. I don't have time to play football. I don't have time to watch movies. I don't have time to go with you. I don't have time for talking. Leave me alone. My attraction is for chanting, reading, hearing, taking darshan of the deity, worshipping. That's where my attraction is. And it is said the mind directly, automatically goes there. Not like in the Bhagavad Gita, yato yato nishchalati, wherever the mind wanders, bring it back, painfully, in the practice. At the stage of asakti, the mind runs to the chanting. And someone has to take you out of it. Hey, don't you remember you have to eat? So asakti is a very elevated stage, which just precedes the perfected stage, which is described in verses 9, 10, and 11. In 9, 10, and 11, there is a description of bhava and prema bhakti, which corresponds to sadhya. It is the stage of perception, perfection. 1 to 8 is sadhana bhakti, and 9 to 11 is sadhya, the stage of perfection. Within 1 to 8, there is 1 to 7, which is Vedi bhakti, and there is 8, which is Raganuga bhakti. So this is the overview of what is coming here, and we will be going through it. Practice is the means. Sadhana means the means. The means to achieve the goal. Sadhya means perfection. Siddhi. 9 to 11. Perfection. Sadhya bhakti.
Understanding the lecture, sadhya means the goal, as sadhana is the steps.
Yes, it is also true. Sadhya means perfection. That is our goal. Our goal is bhava and prema. And the means, the steps, is sadhana. Somebody said attracted to Krishna. No, Haribol. Asakti means attracted to the sadhana, attracted to the holy name, attracted to the practices. Bhava means attracted to Krishna. At the stage of bhava, there is actual perception, transcendental perception of the truth. There is the beginning of the interaction with Krishna. Understand? There is the the beginning of transcendental perception of the Lord. The Lord appears to his devotee. This was the stage of the Goswamis. The Lord would appear to them, sometimes outside, sometimes inside. They can see the Lord. And it begins in the beginning with what they call Spurti. Suddenly, like a flash of lightning, you know? Like when you are in the darkness somewhere, you're in the countryside, and suddenly there is a flash of lightning. How long does it last? We call it flash. Like, very short. Like you have been in such a place that suddenly it's like daytime. You can see the hills, you can see the road, everything. For a fraction of a second. And then it's darkness again. So this is what happens to the devotees, especially reaching these stages which are beyond the three gunas. Bhava is beyond the three gunas. So when we reach that stage, then there is what is called, suddenly there is an appearance of the Lord, like a flash of lightning. This is described very nicely by Vishwanatha Chakravarti in his Madhurya Kadambini, very beautiful book. That suddenly the Lord appears and the devotee feels so much ecstasy, but for one fraction of a second. This can happen in asakti also. It's the beginning. And then the vision is gone. And the sadhaka goes mad, thinking, what was this? What was this? What was this? Something very extraordinary. So asakti, there is attraction. In bhava, the attraction is to Krishna, but there is no more talk of asakti, because in bhava there is no more attraction at all to anything material. Everything is gone. Because the devotee is situated within his own self, understand himself fully spiritual. So let us leave this at this for now. We are going to go through this as we go through the various verses. Very nice. And for us, as you say, it gives us a goal, gives us an idea of what's coming next, coming attractions in our spiritual life, either in this life or in the next life. But it's coming. It will come. If we continue to practice, then this is what will come. So let us look at the preface. Yes?
That the illustration, the network is the illustration, nobody likes it. Why that illustration is considered a nectar? Because illustration is something you have to follow, you have to under the condition like in
the nectar of instruction here means out of all instruction. Nectar also means essence. It is the essence. Sara. Upadesha Sara. Upadesha Amrita or Upadesha Sara. There are so many instructions in all the Vedic literature. Nana shastra vichara aneka nibuno sadharma samsthapakam. This presents sat dharma, the real eternal religion of the jiva, which is love of God, manifested by service. So, out of all the instructions, there are so many instructions in all the Vedic literatures. And the Goswamis have extracted the essential instructions. That is the meaning of Upadesha Sara or Upadesha Amrita. The Amrita is it's like in the Bhagavatam we say, it is the cream, right? So it is the cream of all Vedic literature. So this is the cream of all instructions. You just follow this and perfection is assured. So it is the cream of instructions. Not that, yes, you say instruction, usually you don't like to follow instruction. That's our problem. We are rebellious souls. So this doesn't mean that it can mean also that the instruction is nectar. But it also means this is the essence of all instruction. This is the essential presentation to advance in spiritual life. So interestingly, Srila Prabhupada actually wrote this preface in the Krishna Balaram temple, right here in Vrindavan, in 1975. September, and we heard it was published. He got the first copy, 1st January 76. So you see, fast publication. In September, he wrote the preface, which means the book was finished. He wrote the preface, and then it went for printing. So, this was on Vishwarup Mahotsava. So, let us see. What did we learn from this preface here? What are the various aspects of this preface here that we learned? Yes?
We have the tradition of Bhagavatam also a source, as in the Vedanta Sutra, which is Vyasa Kamani, and Bhagavatam was also like Sumana Mishana. So, what source this nature of such a group is only has source of evidence? So that when he is taken, this is from the scriptures, then he has lies with certain, what's the sequence?
I explained, I think, in the beginning that he got inspired by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu during his stay in Jagannath Puri. This is inspired from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings that he witnessed, he heard in Jagannath Puri.
Not some specific scriptures?
Not really, no. No, it's a compilation. It's a compilation he has created, written, compiled the verses. They are based on Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions to him. Yes, it's the essence of Vedic knowledge. I mean, you know, what the Goswamis did, Nana Shastra Vicharana Eka Nipuno, is they searched all the Vedic literatures, and especially Srimad Bhagavatam. They searched them, and they extracted the teachings. So this Upadeshamrita is based on Chaitanya Charitamrita in the sense that it's based on Mahaprabhu's instructions, which are found in the CC. But you can also say this is the essence of the Bhagavatam, because this is what the Bhagavatam teaches. Bhakti from A to Z. How to practice bhakti, what is bhakti, what is the perfection of bhakti, this is what the Bhagavatam is teaching. The love of Krishna, love of the gopis for Krishna, love of the Rajavasis for Krishna, this is what the Bhagavatam is teaching, and this is what is presented in this book. So you can say it is based on the Bhagavatam if you want. Yes?
So, if it was simply translated as scriptures, because I heard one time Srimad Bhagavatam was saying that whatever Acharya says, that is scripture.
Yes.
So, which part of scriptures will be coming back to? It will be the ayah?
Smriti.
Smriti.
This is Gaudiya Vaishnav Smriti. Compilations by the realized Acharyas, which is in line with the Shruti. In line with the Bhagavatam, which also sometimes is called the Shruti. So it is in line with the Shruti.
But why not Nyaya? Because it is also rules and regulation.
No, Nyaya means philosophy. This is not just philosophy, it's practice. Nyaya refers to the Vedanta. And philosophical presentations, attempts to present, let's say, the tattva. This is not about tattva, this is about rasa. How to achieve the perfection of rasa, to achieve our relationship with Krishna. Jnana is very specific, it's the Vedanta Sutra. And sometimes it says the six Vaishnava philosophies. They come under Nyaya in the sense that they are philosophical presentations dealing with logic. Nyaya means logic. No? So this is not this. The Krishna consciousness movement is conducted under the supervision of Srila Rupa Goswami. The Gaudiya Vaishnavas or Bengali Vaishnavas are mostly followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of whom the six Goswamis of Vrindavan are direct disciples. So, what do we learn here? Sorry? I can't hear you. conducted under the supervision of Srila Rupa Goswami. What is conducted? The Krishna consciousness movement. And what is this Krishna consciousness movement? It is the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is spreading all over the world. So this is the first thing that this preface is explaining. That what is the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? How to understand it and how it is spreading. So what is the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Do we have hands to raise? Yes? Two? Yes? Okay, preaching the holy name?
Yes.
What else? What is the mission?
Yes?
To live, to deliver love of God. This is the mission of Lord Chaitanya. And the chanting of the holy name is, again, it's a sadhana and sadhya at the same time. It's a means of expressing our love for the holy name. It's a means of attaining that love. So, yes. And a little bit more specific? Shubhankar?
To deliver the fallen soul by following the path of bhakti.
To deliver the fallen souls, yes, Prabhupada said. Yes, yes. Deliver the fallen soul. To spread the Bhagavad Dharma means the worship. Okay. What more? Right. It's a little bit more specific. We say the mission of Lord Chaitanya is to give, to deliver love of God. But what kind of love of God specifically? For us to understand the love of Radha and Krishna. It's very specific to Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Actually, the love, this kind of love for the Lord can be attained through others. There are even Christian saints who figured it out. But they had to swim a lot to figure it out. Whereas, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, it is explained to the neophyte as soon as he begins. What is the topmost love of God? Madhurya, Prem, conjugal love. A love that is similar to the love of the gopis, of which Radharani is the main. The love of Radha for Krishna. The love of the gopis for Krishna. This kind of love, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to distribute specifically. So this is the mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and it's the mission of his movement that spreads all over the world. It's not just chan chan chan, like chan chan chan, ram ram ram. Not just that. You have to come to the point of loving God in a certain, under a certain flavor. Of course, we may say there are different flavors and everybody has their own. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to reveal the topmost. And within that topmost, there are some other varieties. But he came to reveal the topmost. And this refers to Madhurya Prema. And Madhurya Prema also means that love of God devoid of Aishwarya. Because usually the idea of God that the people have is some great, 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 great powerful person who is sitting on a big, big, big throne and everybody is doing what? Dandavat. And worship. Everybody is offering worship, everybody is offering dandavat, everybody is scared of him. And he's so rich and he's shining with so many jewels. And there is reverence. Meaning, I am small and he's so big. This is the general idea, at least a little advanced already, because there are other other ideas of God, such as, you know, he is my banker. I go to him when I need something. I go and I ask, give me. So God is the maintainer, he's seen also. There are so many conceptions of God. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give that topmost conception of God, which is devoid of even Aishwarya. No question of asking something, give me a new car. No, nothing like that. It's far beyond that. It's only giving. Giving. And giving to not with any sense of Aishwarya. This is the teaching of Bhagavatam. The coward boys, they ride on Krishna's shoulders and they have a stick and they beat him on the bum saying, go faster. And the gopis, they trick him. They push him in the water. And they come so close to him in a relationship which where there is absolutely no sense of superior and inferior. So this is the jewel, the topmost manifestation of the Supreme Lord, which is revealed in the Srimad Bhagavatam, a God that doesn't even know he's God. In order to enjoy, because he's the great enjoyer, that is what God is. In order to enjoy to his heart content, he has a potency that makes him forget that he is God. And he forgets. And then he plays. And when something goes wrong, then he remembers, hey, I am the God. But he enjoys being an equal, being an inferior. That is his enjoyment. And this is the topmost achievement of the soul, to enter that realm of closeness with the Supreme Personality of God. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealed that in the line of the Bhagavatam. Intimate relationships with the Supreme Lord. This is what he has come to give. And specifically, you know, there are three specific rasas which are particularly conducive to this closeness, which are Sakya, Vatsalya and Madhurya. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself came in the mood of Radha, Madhurya. And he taught this, how to serve the Lord as a lover. Means with such a sweetness, total sweetness, total surrender, and 100% oneness practically, closeness, so much closeness that there is oneness. So this is what he came to give. But how to understand that? What his mission is. Otherwise they say, the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is to spread the chanting of the holy name all over the world. You say that? The mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is to spread the chanting of the holy name all over the world. Is it wrong? It's not wrong. But there is a little bit more behind it. So how to understand completely the mission of Lord Chaitanya? It is written here. How to understand this? We have to read the books of the Goswamis and follow their instructions, especially Upadeshamrita. We have to read the books of the Goswamis. Srila Prabhupada is quoting Narottam Das Thakur. Rupa Raghunatha Pade Haibe Akuti Habe Kama Bhuchavase Jukala Viriti. Akuti means eagerness. When, oh when, will I be eager to understand the literature given by the Goswamis? For only then I shall be able to understand the transcendental loving affairs of Radha and Krishna. That's another thing, is that people in this world, they read the Bhagavatam, they read so many things, they understand Radha and Krishna, eternal lovers. But mostly people understand it with the tinge of mundane contamination. They think Radha is a girl and Krishna is a boy. And they see them in that way. And they may hope that, oh, I can become a girl like Radha, or I can become a boy like Krishna. Very nice. So we have to read the books of the Goswamis to understand. Radha is not a girl of this world. She is the potency, internal potency of Sri Krishna. Unimaginable power. And Krishna is the Supreme Lord. And both of them are completely beyond the material world. And their love has nothing to do with what the people of this world call love. I love you, they say. They write it everywhere. They have t-shirts about it. They make films about it. There is always a movie, you know, and there are so many things happening. And the culmination is when one of them will say, I love you. That's the culmination. But what did he mean or what did she mean? Oh, you please my senses so much. This is what they mean. You please my senses, my mind, everything. When I see you, well, I enjoy. So this is not at all Radha and Krishna. The love means to give. Lust means to take. So to understand what love is, we must read the literature of the Goswamis. And we must read this Upadeshamrita and practice it. So here, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in order to bestow upon human society the benediction of the science of Krishna. What means science? What is the science?
Yes? Theory and practice.
Theory and practice. Yes? Something more? What is the science? Practical knowledge. Yes?
Systematic.
The science is something that, in one sense, can be proven. It works. So it is a process, a scientific process. The science means that there is the theory and it leads you to something. And if you do it, A plus B plus C, it's like the chemical combination. If you do it right, it explodes. If you do it wrong, it implodes. Different. So the science of Krishna means that this sadhana bhakti, which is taught by the Goswamis, very systematically will produce a result. A transformation of the consciousness. That is the result. To understand the mission of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and follow in his footsteps, one must very seriously follow in the footsteps of the six Goswamis. What is the key word here? Seriously. And follow, of course. Follow. Follow and seriously. Yes. And it's true, follow is also important. So seriously. Not lightly, not once in the blue moon, you know, I remember to go to the temple. No. So very seriously, there has to be soberness. And follow, as opposed to, what is the opposite of follow?
Be independent.
Be independent, but there is another thing that is not imitate. Yeah. Follow as opposed to imitate. Like we had a drama. Some people do drama all life. What was the drama in Tirthakadamba? So you will see they were wearing like the same dress as the Goswamis. So it was a drama. Wearing the same dress, talking the same words, doing the same movements. That is drama. So we are not here for drama. We are not meant to imitate. That is good for drama for a few minutes. But in our daily life, we must follow. Which means you read the instructions, understand, and then practice. That is different. So how was Sri Rupa Goswami the leader of all the Goswamis? Why? How? What made him the leader? Yes,
Shiva?
Yes, he is the one who understood the inner mind of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. No one else, only he. So therefore he is a step ahead. Yes? Anything else? Yes? Okay, yes. Descended very specifically to assist Mahaprabhu, yes? Yes, in the sense that he understood him, and also Mahaprabhu instructed him. He instructed him in where? In Allahabad, Prayag, and he instructed him in Jagannath Puri. And even in Ramkeli. So he spent a lot of time with him. And he instructed him. Yes. And in which other way is Rupa Goswami the leader? Yes.
One lecture. One senior devotee called him. She said that Rupa Goswami is the root manjari in the spiritual world. And she is like the highest pleasure to Krishna. That's the Mahaprabhu chosen.
Yes. He is Rupa manjari. He is a spiritual transcendental identity is Rupa Manjari, who is directly next to Radha. And Mahaprabhu came in the mood of Radha. So by this spiritual identity in the spiritual world, he is the leader. So in that sense, Rupa Goswami is the leader. And he has come to guide us. He has come to guide us. And this Upadeshamrita is very much his instruction.
Is this what is recommended with this syndrome, what Prashna was asking? That among the five instructions, five types of instructions, Chaitanya is the same given by Mahaprabhu. The one is Rupa Goswami, this is Rupa Goswami. So he got this direct instruction from Mahaprabhu before Sri Rupa Goswami. Maybe that one is. Like Mahaprabhu has given direct instruction.
Yes.
Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Raya, Rupa Goswami, Rupa Goswami. Like that. So in that place, Rupa Goswami teaches to Rupa Goswami comes first before Sanatana Goswami.
Actually, Rupa and Sanatana many times are considered together. Both of them received the instructions about bhakti regarding love of Godhead, both of them. But Sanatana Goswami is considered the Sambandha Acharya. He has taught him certain things about bhakti, how to connect. And Rupa Goswami is the Abhideya Acharya. So he is a step forward in that sense also, that he has been taught the sadhana, he has been taught how to develop the relationship with the Supreme Lord. And Raghurat Das is said he's the Prayojana Acharya. However, considering all this, for us what is the most important is the Abhideya. It's the practice. How we are going to evolve our relationship with Krishna. Then after this, and understanding what is the mission, what is the Upadeshamrita, what is Rupa Goswami, what is the Krishna Consciousness Movement, Then Prabhupada goes into explaining us what is the process for advancing in Krishna consciousness. So let us see whether we got it. It's all said in a nutshell here. So how do we advance in Krishna consciousness? What is the beginning? In all spiritual affairs, even if it's not bhakti, even if it's jnana, ashtanga, whatever, the first duty is to control the mind and senses. Okay. Unless one controls his mind and senses, one cannot make any advancement in spiritual life. Mind and senses are functioning under the mode of passion and ignorance, mostly. And as long as they are under those modes, they are totally wild, uncontrolled. So, now, why do we have to control the senses? What happens by controlling the senses? We come to the platform of goodness. Yes. The senses are running. Either they stay inactive, being completely, you know, controlled by the mode of ignorance, or they are hyperactive, being controlled by the mode of passion. So by controlling the senses, we come to the mode of goodness. How is that?
We are engaging the senses in Krishna consciousness. That's why we go into the mode of goodness, without letting them be engaged in sense.
And what does it mean to engage the senses in Krishna consciousness in terms of sadhana?
Concentrate.
You hear, you chant. What is the main thing about our sadhana? I remember when I joined, it was quite a shocking. What is the main thing? What does sadhana mean?
It's our attitude.
No, we are not there yet.
Like under guidance in the mission. Sadhana working is the mission of Guru Maharaj. Under their supervision.
Okay, under supervision. What do we do in sadhana?
Try to remember Krishna,
yes?
Practice regularly.
Yeah, yeah. We practice regularly and repeatedly. This is what the sadhana is about. You become, you do everything the same thing. I remember this was shocking when I first joined. I joined the temple. And it was like, you know, every morning, every day, at the same time, they sing the same song. And they do the same arti with exactly the same number of rounds, and they chant the same mantras, they chant the same prayers, and when they finish, then the next day, they do the same thing again. I'm like, what's fun about this? Every day the same thing. Repeatedly. And this is a, because what do the senses want to do? Different, different. Every day something new. The senses want to run everywhere. Prabhupada said, what is the disease? Change, change. So this is a mode of passion. You want something? Yesterday we ate rice. Why you bring rice again? You know, no. Today should be pasta. Next day should be something else. You know, like this. Change, change, change. This is the mode of passion. Exploring new realms of sense gratification, of activities, of relationships, everything new, new, change, change. So, what is the sadhana? Control of the senses means, whoa, 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 did you remember we did it yesterday? Let's do it again. And the mind is like, oh, no, 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 I don't want that, I don't want. But no, same. You get up again. You say, get up at what time? Same time. Early morning. We have to endeavor. Sometimes you succeed, sometimes you don't succeed. But the point is, don't forget. So every day you beat the mind with the shoe. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati with the shoe. So same thing. And then you go to the same place every day. And then you sing the same song every day. Repeatedly. So this is called regulation. And if you see in the Bhagavad Gita, regulation is one of the symptoms of the mode of goodness. Those who are in the mode of goodness, they can do it. Those who are in the mood of tamas and rajas, they have such a hard time with the sadhana. It's so hard because rajas and tamas are pulling in a different direction. So, but by practicing this regulation of control of the senses, like for example, you know, you see the new apples on the market, you know. So the person who doesn't have any regulation, he just grabs the apple and sticks it in the mouth immediately. Or the sweets in the sweet shop. You know, it's like the monkey, as soon as he sees the banana, you cannot stop him. There is a direct connection between his eyes and the banana and the strong determination, and he will get it. This is uncontrolled senses. But what do we know? You get the apple. You don't lust over it. It's an apple for Krishna. The apple is for Krishna. You buy it. You don't smell it. You just somehow figure that it's ripe. You take it in the bag. Then you bring it home. You don't eat it. First you have to wash it, you have to do your whole puja, then you have to cut it, then you have to ring the bell, then you have to offer it to Krishna. And only after, and finally, that's how it feels in the beginning. Oh, finally now I can eat. So by doing this, the passion is curbed. Ignorance is kicked out. You have to offer the apple to Krishna. So you have to go to the market. You have to bring it. You have to keep clean. So this ignorance is kicked out. And passion is controlled. Not now, not now, not now. And slowly, slowly, this mode of goodness is cultivated. And the more we become regulated, the more the mode of goodness is invoked. And what does it produce otherwise, the mode of goodness? Prabhupada said, one must promote himself to the platform of goodness, otherwise called sattva-guna, by following the instructions of Rupa Goswami. And then what happens? What is another symptom of goodness? What, Vladimir? Happiness, okay, yeah, feels good.
Knowledge,
yes, this is the main thing. Sattva-gun is illuminating. Tamo-gun covers the consciousness. And Raja-gun also covers the consciousness. But Sattva-gun is illuminating. So it is like a lamp of knowledge. It's like a lamp. And what does the light do? Drives away darkness and at the same time simultaneously makes everything clear. So the mode of goodness that Prabhupada said, everything concerning how to make further progress will be revealed. We have to endeavor with these regulated activities of sadhana to rise to the sattva-guna. And when the sattva-guna is there, from within, there will be revelation what to do next. Interesting. Scientific. Very systematic. Sometimes devotees say we don't need the mode of goodness. But that's not what Prabhupada says here. And that's not the teaching of Rupa Goswami. Goodness will come as a result of sadhana bhakti. And you see many type of devotees, they join the movement. Initially, We are not all Brahmanas. But slowly, 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 even a madman can actually come to the level of Brahmanical activity. It is not just external, it's because within the mole of goodness has grown. So this is, the mole of goodness will give us knowledge, it will allow us to follow the guidance of the Paramatma, how to proceed. It will free us from sinful reactions. And what do we become by what do we become when we are self-controlled? What do we become? What's the word of somebody who has controlled the senses? Goswami. There are two Gos. One is Godasa and the other is
Goswami.
Godasa is the servant of the senses and the Goswami is the controller of the senses. So this will, and mode of goodness corresponds to this nishtha. We come to that level. Meaning at least the mode of goodness means we have gone from the level of being a neophyte devotee to being a madhyamadhikari, who has control over the senses. And from there, we will elevate ourselves further. Srila Prabhupada says, unless one controls his senses and mind, one cannot become a Goswami. To achieve the highest success in life by becoming a Goswami and then a pure devotee of the Lord. So you see the progress from sense control to goodness, establishing oneself as a Goswami and then further as a pure devotee. Pure devotee means even further than just, this is the Uttama, Uttamvakta. The topmost devotee in bhava and prema. So that person is the actual definition of the pure devotee. Pure devotee, there are different definitions of the pure devotee. One who follows the pure devotee is a pure devotee. Okay, that's good. One who practices the principles of pure bhakti is a pure devotee. But actually the pure devotee is only pure when he has become free from most of the anarthas and has come to the Nirguna platform. That person really is a pure devotee. That is the topmost definition of the pure devotee. Although Prabhupada said all my disciples are pure devotees. That is in the sense they are following. But to actually become pure in heart, that requires purification. It is beyond the mode of goodness. So Srila Prabhupada clarifies in his preface here that the Vaishnavas are generally known as Goswamis. Why they are known as Goswamis, the Vaishnavas?
Their senses are controlled
by their constant engagement in Krishna consciousness. So it is understood, Prabhupada said, Vaishnava is higher. It is higher than Brahmana and it is higher than Goswami. But they are considered to be already Goswamis because all their senses are engaged in Krishna consciousness. And then Srila Prabhupada also denies that in Vrindavan, sometimes there are some people called Goswamis, like we went to the Radha Damodar temple. So those who are managing and running the temple there, they are called Goswamis. But in that sense, meaning it has become an hereditary title. So to be a Goswami is not a hereditary title. It corresponds to one who is fully engaged in the activities of Krishna consciousness, whose senses are not engaged in the material world. Now, how does this progress will take place from Okay, you control the senses, you go to goodness, then everything will be revealed, and then you become a Goswami, and then you become a pure devotee. What is the key for this advancement to take place? Yes, okay, the guidance of a pure devotee, that is true. Yes? The attitude, yes. This is the most important point of this preface. Advancement in Krishna consciousness depends on the attitude of the follower. This is a very, very, very important statement. Very important statement. Otherwise, we would say like this, for example, having the guidance of a pure devotee, it is true, but the pure devotee may give guidance and the disciple may not
follow.
He may not follow, and why he is not following? Because the attitude is wrong. Sometimes we may think. That's why you remember during the orientation, the first 3 days, what did we mostly talk about? What did we do during the orientation of Bhakti Shastri?
Dasa.
Yes? We talked about the attitude. We talked about our motivation. What are we here for? What do we want? What's our mood? Because this is what will determine the success of the course. And similarly for our entire life in Krishna consciousness, what is it that will determine the advancement? Is our attitude. The attitude has to be favorable to Krishna. The attitude has to be that of service. Why do we take initiation? Believe it or not, but people have many reasons to take initiation. There are many reasons, meaning wrong attitudes, the wrong purpose. What could be some wrong purpose to take initiation? Oh, I want a spiritual name. Yeah, well, that's very simple. Want a spiritual name? Then? I want a spiritual name. Why? To give some prestige in the society. You know, when you're Bhakta Das, who cares what you say? And when you are the new Bhakta, you always have to listen to everybody, because obviously you've come last and you should just listen and serve. But once you become Dasa, then you can give others orders. Right? So, yes, so we want a spiritual name to be somebody in the society. Is this going to give us spiritual advancement? No, not at all, because the attitude is wrong. Any other wrong attitude? Yes? Oh, okay, you want to dump everything on your guru and be free from karma. You want liberation. Yes, you want liberation. So it's not fully pure, okay? It may be a little bit in the mood of goodness, but it's not fully pure. Yes, Shivanka?
To get some Buddhism in the temple, if your Guru Maharaj is coming, what do in the temple, you will get some
Buddhism. So you mean you want to take initiation from a specific spiritual master, because through being a disciple of that spiritual master, you can get a position in the temple. But if you take initiation from another one, they won't give you any position in the temple. Right? Right. Happens, doesn't it? It does. It does happen. It's a bug. It's a bug. Yes. And sometimes people believe this, or you will take, or somebody may say, which is not fully wrong, like you were saying, we need the guidance of a very advanced devotee. So someone will like very carefully choose taking initiation from a spiritual master who maybe has many, 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 many disciples, thinking that it's a proof that that he is very pure or very advanced because he has so many disciples. So he must be very pure, very advanced. And the logic is that if I take initiation from an advanced guru, then next, what will happen to me? I will advance. If my guru is advanced, I will advance. Is that true? No, madam. Yes and no. Of course it's wonderful to take initiation from an advanced guru. But is that what is going to determine my progress, to take initiation from an advanced spiritual master? Is this going to only determine my progress? No. Because I can take initiation from an advanced guru and continue all my nonsense and not have the right goal in my life. The goal is to serve. The goal is to become pure. The goal is to develop love of Krishna. But my goal is to just, you know, take advantage of this person so advanced. So I think that just by getting initiated, everything will be okay. And I will advance. But these are all wrong attitudes. When we approach the spiritual master, what should be our attitude?
To serve.
How can I serve you? Not how can you serve me? Because that's what it is. He is advanced, and I want to advance. In other words, I approach him to serve me, to give me spiritual advancement. But this is not the right attitude with the spiritual master. The spiritual master is, how can I serve you? And if that attitude is there, Srila Prabhupada writes that in the Bhagavatam that even that sometimes a disciple becomes more advanced than his guru. How did he do that? It's the mercy of the guru. And how did he get it? Because he followed his instruction, and especially he had the right attitude. He was so devoted. He was in such a serving mood. He was so devoted that his heart became completely purified. So this is the instruction that we are getting here, and we should take this very seriously. And be introspective. It means that advancement in Krishna consciousness is a lot based on our introspection and catching ourselves. Why am I doing this? Why am I doing it? Everything we do in Krishna consciousness, there has to be some introspection. Why am I sitting in the front? Why am I sitting in the back? Why am I here? Why am I not there? Why do I go to the temple? Why do I chant my rounds? Every time there has to be the right attitude and the right purpose, which is to serve Krishna, to please the spiritual master. And if there is anything else in the mind, that becomes a block to our advancement. Therefore, Prabhupada many times said that advancement in Krishna consciousness does not depend on education, for example. Someone is very educated, but his mind is crooked. And another person is so simple, but he's pure, he's serious and sincere. So that sincerity of heart, this is what determines the advancement. Nothing else. So this is for us to note, because otherwise we can think, sometimes we think, if you go to Mangalati every single day, 365 days a year, and all your life, then you will certainly go back to God. Is it true? Someone says, no. It's good, nobody says, it's also said, you try your best, you do. But this is not. You can be in Mangalarti and just look at what others are doing and find faults. You can be in Mangalarti and remember what you have eaten the day before. You can be in Mangalarti and your mind can be in New York. You can do so many things while in Mangalarti. You can be in Mangalarti because you are forced to go there because you don't want to leave the temple. And if you don't go to Mangalarti, they're going to kick you out and you're going to have to marry and you're going to have to earn money and you're going to, you know, what a motivation to be in Mangalarti. So it is not the external practices of Krishna consciousness which are going to give us advancement. It is the mood with which they are practiced. The mood for chanting, the mood for serving, the mood is the most important. So this is a really important point that Srila Prabhupada is giving us, and this will be one of the themes of the Upadeshamrita, the attitudes, the moods of the devotees for progressing Krishna consciousness. One must follow the instructions known as Upadeshamrita, which have been given by Srila Rupa Goswami. Srila Rupa Goswami has given many other books, such as Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Vidagdha Madhava, and Lalita Madhava. But, so it is interesting, but Upadeshamrita constitutes the first instructions for neophyte devotees. One should follow these instructions very strictly. Then it will be easier to make one's life successful. What is important to note here?
Very strictly.
We should strictly follow. And what else he said?
These first instructions are for neophyte.
Rupa Goswami has written many books. Some people, they say, well, I prefer Vidagdha Madhava. Why not? You know, I prefer Vidagdha Madhava. I love the Stavamala. But what is Prabhupada's instruction? Did you read Upadeshamrita? That is the question. Did you read it and did you practice it? This is the book to read and practice. And after you practice and read and you advance to a certain level, because all the books that Rupa Goswami has written, they are not all at the same level. And they are not all for the same kinds of devotees. Like Ujjvala Nilamani. Oh, Prabhu, I'm reading Ujjvala Nilamani. Oh. It's all about Radha and Krishna. But who should be reading that book? Those who are seeking the eternal Swarup, those who are already purified. Those who are already purified, when they read Ujjvala Nilamani, they, wow, it opens gates. But when the neophyte, who is not even practicing the basic items of sense control, reads Ujjvala Nilamani, Prabhupada said, instead of getting purified, you get putrefied. This is what happens. Instead of purified, putrefied. Beautiful poetry describing the gopis, and they have these big, big breasts and these big, big hips, and you are not sense controlled. What will happen when you read all these beautiful descriptions? They are indeed very beautiful because they are not describing material bodies. They are describing spiritual bodies, but I have no spiritual eyes. So I will see with my material eyes. So therefore, Prabhupada is giving us the instruction here that according to one's level of advancement, which one should know by introspection and by the instructions, the guidance of the spiritual master, by the feedback of the peer Vaishnavas, then one should read the books that are suitable for one's level of advancement. So there are many, many books, but we should not step over and start reading something else. Nowadays it's an important instruction that Srila Prabhupada is giving, because all books are available on the market. You just go to the bookstore and you ask for anything. and you will get it. So, but we should not jump over. We should read whatever is at our own level. And sometimes when an advanced devotee, by some mercy, we arrive in a katha where some advanced devotee is speaking from some of these esoteric books. And maybe it's our mercy that day that somehow we came, and if we have chanted good rounds, we may also be able to somehow, by the mercy of the advanced devotee, grasp something. But when we do our daily reading, we should read what Prabhupada said. You read Bhagavad Gita. You read Upadeshamrita. Ishopanishad. Srimad Bhagavatam. Nectar of Devotion. Chaitanya Charitamrita. These are the books that Srila Prabhupada gave us for our own benefit. And everything is in my books, Srila Prabhupada said. What does it mean, everything?
Information that we need.
All the information we need to go up to where?
Back to Godhead.
Up to Godhead. To go all the way to the level of bhava and prema, everything is in those books. So they are always the basis. Before we stop, I will say, out of these aims here, what specific aims are mostly covered in Upanishamrita, would you guess?
Personal
application. Wow, 10 marks. Yes, personal application. Anything else? Mood and mission. Yes, we already started with the mission of Lord Chaitanya. Srila Prabhupada in this book is going to tell us everything about what ISKCON is supposed to be, what a devotee is. So there is mood and mission, personal application. These are the very important faith and conviction. Our faith in the process should also grow by reading this book. Okay, so we will stop here. Yes? One question, two questions.
One thing about the purpose of the last thing. Second problem, we were saying that Srila Goswami gave us Upadeshamrita so that we become pure Vaishnavas. And second, also, Prabhupada was saying the third shloka, pure devotional service. The first shloka also is saying that the two senses can be disabled all over the body.
Yeah.
But all over disciples can become pure devotees. And here, Prabhupada mentioned, we simultaneously do the this helps to become pure Vaishnava and for new ways. How can we decide this?
Because we saw that it will take you from sense control to Krishna Prem, one verse after the next. So it is for neophytes because it starts from the very beginning. There are six urges and this is what you have to control. So you gain that knowledge. And then you learn from the next verses how to engage your senses, what to practice, what should be your attitudes about life. So it is for neophyte devotees. And as we said, as far as the neophytes reading that book, the initial verses up to 7 are very practical for direct application. And the rest give us a goal, an aspiration. We know where we are going. Okay? But this book is also for advanced devotees and will turn us into pure devotees if we follow. Advanced devotees read number 8. And they understand it. We don't. Advanced devotees read number 8 and figure this is what it means and this is how you practice it. Understand? And those who are even further advanced, they relish the last 3 verses. Any classes on Upadeshamrita you go in many places, what they will do? They'll spend so much time on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and when they come to 8, what they do? Zip study. Especially 9, 10, 11. Usually one class, 3 verses. Why? they don't find anything there. They don't find anything there. But the person who is more advanced finds so much in those verses. So they are both, because it covers the entire spectrum of bhakti. This book is both for neophytes, very good for neophytes, but it's also for the pure devotees. So, did this answer your question? And there was
and then his thinking, sincerely, prepared by Krishna. You know, the initial stage, the devotee's beginner stage, we don't see that, you know, this attitude can develop in the beginner stage. But please, this attitude will become the later stage, you know, not the Madhava stage.
Well, but at least, yes, but at least the attitude should be correct from the beginning. Like some people come to steal. Some, like, you know, four kinds of people come to Krishna. Some come to take, some come, you know, their attitude is wrong. So the kind of advancement they make is very slow, right? When you can get the right attitude, actually you cannot please Krishna, but you can please the devotee you meet. You know, you can please the temple commander, you can please the temple president, or you can please, you know, the person who preaches to you. You can try to be in that favorable attitude. And favorable attitude, of course, begins with humility. To humbly, you know, submit and accept and hear. So that has to be cultivated. The attitude has to be cultivated from the beginning. It's not the topmost, you know, you do it out of love for Krishna, but at least be honest, be straightforward, be honest, be sincere. So that has to be cultivated. So this is instruction for all of us who are preachers, for example, that when we preach to the people, we also have to watch their mind and see what they are about. Because if they are about the wrong thing, they are going in the wrong direction, even though they may be chanting. So yes, as we become more pure and more pure, then our attitude becomes purer and purer and purer. But from the beginning, we have to take the right direction. That's why association is so important. Which devotees we associate with? Yeah. Because not everyone is a sincere, serious person. So we have to be very careful with whom we associate. In India, sometimes they say, chalega, chalega. Chalega, chalega. You know. Oh, I think we need to put one more garland here, you know. Chalega, chalega. What's the time will be at? What kind of servant is that? So be careful. What kind of devotees we associate with? This is the chalega type. You know, everything goes. Let's get out of here. This is not the right type of persons to associate with. So, from the beginning, we have to be careful of our association so that we cultivate that pure attitude. And we have to pray for that, because sometimes you become a devotee in some sangha where people are like, oh my God, they're not serious. Because it is said, for example, you can become a devotee in a nightclub. Some blue devotee is there, you know, drinking beer, and he's teaching you how to chant Hare Krishna. But that doesn't mean you have to continue that kind of association, drink beer and chant Hare Krishna, you know. You have to be intelligent and understand that this person doesn't have the right attitude. He's got the right goods, but not the right attitude. We have to see it in ourselves, and we have to see it in others. Yes.
One point you mentioned in the last paragraph. You said when everything concerned now make all the progress of the rain. So I'm just understanding the practical point of saying this one scenario. That if somebody is a god of goodness, understand, we see the who is the pure goodness, they are automatically revealed. How someone in the Madhyama Adhikari is the revealed everything by Krishna?
The revelation happens like this, like for example, you know, you are reading you are reading a verse or a purport, if you are covered by ignorance and passion, you don't get it. You know, the Shabda, as it conveys a fact, a meaning, an experience, or some, and if you are covered by the lower, you read it, but you don't understand it. If you have elevated yourself to the mode of unit, when you read it, there is no curtain between you and the Paramatma. So it is revealed. You read and understand. In goodness, you read and understand. In passion, you read and misunderstand or don't get it. So in that sense, it is revealed. That, as I said, it is enlightening. So you get revelation in the sense that you get guidance from the books which you couldn't understand before. And you get guidance from within. It is said, you get guidance from within and from without. So from within, you tend to understand things better. You understand the lectures, you understand the books, you understand the people, and what is much more is that you understand how to chant. You understand the path in the mind, how to go further. This is revealed. You grasp it because of the mode of goodness, which is very clear. It's not pure, but it reveals a lot. So in that sense. And it will be revealed also means you get some mercy. People will give you instructions that you didn't ask for. It happens. And if you are covered by illusion and all that, you'll be like, what is he talking about? But if you are in the mode of goodness, the instruction will come and you will take it and practice it. So in that sense, there is revelation. And it's gradual. More and more and more and more and more and more transcendental. And transcendental is experience. To actually experience something between the beyond the senses and beyond the mind. Okay, so we stop here. And there is one more question. It's late. Is it a quick question?
Yes. Who has written the commentaries or who has translated the higher level books of Rupa Goswami Prabhupada in English? Because I saw you read not all the books, but few of the books in English.
In English right now, the BBT has published this Nectar of Devotion and the Nectar of Instruction. These two books are what Prabhupada has published. And we have other devotees, like ISKCON devotees, like Gopipalanandana Prabhu. He translated parts of the Stavamala, and he translated some other small works. And we have Bhanu Swami in South India, who is a very prolific translator. So he has translated some of the books of Jiva Goswami, Rupa Goswami, like the Laghu Bhagavatamrita, he has translated. And the BBT is coming up with some productions of Jiva Goswami's Sandarbhas. Gopipalanandana gave us the Tattva Sandarbha. And like that. There was a devotee named Kushakrata. He translated all the six Goswami's books. Kushakrata joined, they used to call him crazy. He was crazy. His name was Kushakrata. And when he joined, he was crazy. Like this kind of Vata type of person. He was a little crazy. So nobody wanted to share a room with him. Nobody wanted to be with him. They tried to have him kick him out by telling Prabhupada that we have this guy here and he does this and he does that and he does this.
So the Lord has Samani and Bhogadam? Then the Lord has Samani and Bhogadam?
Kushakrata?
Yeah.
Does he? I don't know.
I'm asking him. I know there's a
Bhogadam. I'm not aware. samadhi or deep.
Is it Lord Mahasaya disciple?
No, it's Prabhupada disciple. I'm not aware that the samadhi was made.
Else,
it was very, very...
Somebody else.
Sankirtan.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
No, he was very humble, very, very humble. You know. So this person, when he joined, he was Bhakta Peter, I think, and he was crazy, considered crazy, and he was into crack also. And but Prabhupada told them he is your tapasya. When they wanted him out, he said he is your tapasya. And he shifted to Los Angeles. And when he came to Los Angeles, the BBT was there, and he immediately got the association of Gopi Parandadana, who was also what do you call it? Avaduta type. He was like Avaduta type. So they very much matched together, and he learned Sanskrit from Gopi Parandadana. He was the best student. And he learned Sanskrit, and not only he learned Sanskrit, but he started translating. And he became a prolific translator at the time when in ISKCON there was no books other than Prabhupada's books. Nothing was there, you know. Translations were in Hindi, nothing in English. So he translated all the Goswami's books. Imagine, so many books, all the Satsandarbhas of Jiva Goswami, all these Laghu Bhagavad Gita, the Brihad Bhagavad Gita, all the poetries, all the Sat, everything. And after he translated everything, in fact, he was the essential key man for all the senior devotees in ISKCON who needed to read the books of the Sikh Goswami to guide their disciples to advance further. They were all reading Pushapratha's books. His books were published in small, small white booklets, and they were circulated. And these were the only books available for many, many years. You know, and Pushapratha, after he finished translating all the Goswami's books, he started writing his own poetry. And he started writing poetry in Sanskrit. And he wrote tons of poetry in Sanskrit. And when he finished that, he started writing poetry in English. So he was, you know, and he finished his days. So this is the kind of books we read. Mostly we should read, if we read anything that has been translated, at least either by an ISKCON devotee or furthest is some Gaudiya Math devotee, you know. And if you go further than that, then you run the risk of, you know, meeting different concepts. So Pushapratha, he passed away some years ago. He was in the MBT. He was distinguished by his dragging feet. He would drag his feet. He had holes in his dhoti. He was a brahmachari. He had holes in his dhoti. And he would just go from his... He was writing all the time. So he would go from his apartment to the MBT store. And he would buy several bottles of 1 liter of water. And he would go back to his room. And when you would pass by his room, the only thing you could see... You could see the window, and behind the window there were piles of empty bottles. He would just drink, throw, right, drink, throw, right, drink, throw, right, more water, drink, throw, right. There was hardly any space in the apartment. It was full of bottles, like that. Then he got cancer in the throat. He had a big ball. He refused to do any treatment. And he simply left. He was a very pure soul, very wonderful person. So we read this kind of books, if we can. But first we should, at the same time, first or at least at the same time, we should endeavor to follow the basic things that Prabhupada gave us. Srila Prabhupada, the king. Upadeshamrita, the king.